Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organizational studies, brought to you with the support of the School of Business, Management and Economics at the University of Sussex. This is episode 38, where we are discussing John Van Manen's paper, Police Socialization, a longitudinal examination of job attitudes in an urban police department, published in Administrative Science Quarterly on 1975. To get the text and for more information, please visit our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. In this first part of the episode, we will discuss the main ideas of the text and its position within the management and organizational scholarship. In the next weeks, we will release the second and third parts of this episode. This is Pedro, coming to you from Kenilworth in the UK.
This is Miranda, coming to you from Leamington Spa in the UK.
My name is Dimitris, podcasting from Athens in Greece.
And this is Tom, coming to you from Carlisle, Pennsylvania in the United States.
Welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, today we are delving into a very interesting article by someone that is a major scholar in our field, John Van Manen. John Van Manen is currently a professor in organizational studies at MIT, and he's has been very important in the field as someone that has pushed for the development of ethnography and also for an attention for occupational dynamics within organizations. In this paper, which is actually based on Van Manen's PhD's thesis, we enter the theme of socialization. The work that Manen has done for his PhD was a fieldwork, ethnographic fieldwork of a police department in a major urban city. He trained with the policemen in the academy and then joined the force and stayed there for a long time, for a reasonable long time, following and going about the work with these people. In this paper, however, we learn more from the quantitative side of the research, that is, the questionnaire he did in a longitudinal fashion to understand the changing nature of the job attitudes of the policemen. He is interested in the paper basically on the issue of motivation and the general values that the policemen develop as they join and become senior members of this occupational group. And he was able to uncover a number of interesting results. The most unexpected one might be the fact that there is an inverse relationship between the way into the motivation of the policeman and the evaluation of field performance from the sergeants. The paper also touches upon a number of issues related to values, commitment, satisfaction, and therefore is very linked to a number of previous episodes. More significantly, the one episode 3, in which we talk about Maslow and motivation, episode 11, in which we talk about high reliability organizations, episode 13, in which we also talk about occupational dynamics, episode 30, in which we talk about corporate culturalism, episode 34, in which we also talk about occupational dynamics, and episode 35, in which we talk about emotional labor. So why don't we start and try to make sense of the overall context and background of this paper?
Sure. So I can try to give some headway in this regard. So the paper, kind of, as you summarized in a lovely way, follows the author as he attempts a training program at a Union City Police Department. And specifically, the reason for him to do that was to look at the process by means of which new organizational members learn behaviors and attitudes of the organization. So, you know, as the title suggests, this is a paper about the process of socialization. Importantly, it was published in 1975. And the author was looking at three areas, specifically motivation, commitment, and need satisfaction of new recruits and how that changes over time as they progress through their training. There is a long, long section on methodology, on how this is done, which is interesting. But basically, it's a combination of quantitative and qualitative methods and Van Manen does an excellent job of reflecting on how the two are balanced and how the richness of ethnographic data that he collected while being, interestingly, an armed member of the patrol team on the backseat of a patrol vehicle, and the surveys measuring motivation, trustworthiness, ability, and loyalty, amongst other things, of new recruits relative to their new working environments. One thing with regards to context that I found very interesting is this paper was published in 1975, right? And we'll talk about findings more and about what Van Manen's suggested implications are. But I kind of went and looked up the general environment of police in the United States throughout 70s, 80s, and 90s. The reason I did that is because in the paper, they talk a lot about how rigid the process of socialization is and how well it insulates police departments from change and innovation and that sort of thing. So I went to look it up. And 70s and especially 80s and 90s were very much characterized by increased number of purges of many police departments. And I was looking specifically at the New York Police Department in light of abuse incidents that were coming to light through those years. And there was like a huge number of different commissions and reports going on about police abusing power and kind of engaging in all kinds of nasty things that we still see today. And I couldn't help reflecting on the things that Van Manen mentioned in this paper with regards to how difficult it is to change these existing arrangements that we'll be discussing, and the things that were going on in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and even now. And it's very thought-provoking to look at this from the point of view of social commentary. But then again, I'm very curious to see what Tom thinks, because, you know, none of us live in the U.S., and Tom, you're the only...
I'm the only American here. Okay, well, that's one of the things that I think is also important to recognize is how different... in terms of being under the microscope, or say under the, maybe not the microscope, but just the visibility and transparency of police operations between the 1970s, long before the days of cell phones, long before the days of handheld movie cameras and all that sort of thing, where the police environment was perhaps a little bit more insulated, as opposed to today, where just about anything and everything a policeman does is videotaped and scrutinized and posted into YouTube and all that sort of thing. So the insularity of the police forces is, I think that was a very important factor in understanding the context. If you were comparing it to, say, today, of what, you know, maybe a current researcher might do if they were to replicate Van Manen's study.
Interestingly, there have been attempts to do that. When I was doing research for this, I stumbled upon a French study from 2013, I believe, and the researcher at one point in securing access and kind of doing more in-depth study ran against similar insulation and similar restrictions with the French police. So, you know, this is all alive and well, and not just in the United States.
Hmm. The dynamics are probably have shifted a bit to an even stronger defensive posture, trying to protect that the organization from too much scrutiny. And I don't doubt that that's at play in a lot of police departments nowadays.
You think that's the case? I was wondering whether it is or not, because on the one hand, Van Manen mentions Becker a lot in Becker's 1967 study, which was talking about the hierarchy of credibility, where there are so many themes here. We'll get to that in parts 2 and 3. But I was thinking about with regards to Becker, it's about that police are at the top of the hierarchy of credibility, so their story is the right story, and there isn't much space for contradicting that as much. And that's, I think, the primary factor of this insulation. But also I was thinking about the experience of the U.S. Army during the Vietnam War with the press, that there was a huge level of transparency afforded to the press, which was kind of rolled back a bit afterwards following all the stuff that came out of the reporting of that conflict.
Well, the I was going to bring up the army at certainly at some point because of the parallels in terms of just the socialization process, and because Van Manen's study, of course, is looking at police recruits who are coming in. Basically they join the force after being recruited, and this the police training becomes their first major episode in entry into the police force, learning about what it means to be a policeman or a policewoman, and so forth. And it's there's a lot of parallels in terms of the purpose of this training training regimen in military forces in general. Entry level, you know, what we had is boot camp, which served a lot of the same purpose. It was essentially to begin the socialization process to get folks' identity changed from whoever they were before and change them into what would make them an effective soldier, sailor, marine, what have you. A lot of parallels there.
Okay, so before we go into too much detail in the parallels, maybe we can try to go into the specifics of the police environment. Just a quick note, I forgot to say at the beginning, but basically what is very unique about this paper, especially at the time, was that Van Manen was pushing for a different kind of research orientation. You know, he was pushing for looking at the process of socialization up close, you know, how it unfolds, and to look at the work, like how the not only this, how much the socialization happened, but how did it happen as part of the work of the policeman and woman? So instead of looking at what was typical at the time at psychological traits in themselves outside of the work context, he was pushing for, you know, a more fieldwork, ethnographic-based kind of understanding of this theme. And, well, what seems to me that strikes me that his main, the way he characterizes this culture is this overall idea of laying low, hanging loose, and not expecting too much, as he put it in the paper. So this kind of motivation that stays, and he highlights that, but also a general work attitude in which the policemen expect the recruits to learn not to be too eager or not too motivated, if that makes any sense, to more, you know, stick by what has to be done instead of looking for more work.
What I kind of like got from that part, because I found it very interesting, was more an idea of respect for the tradition and for your elders. So a sense of what we may denote in common everyday language as a very hierarchical structure that you may think typical of a military environment, for instance. So respect for who's been there before. I don't know what you think about it.
Well, unquestionably, the role of the sergeants in that was very strong. I mean, it was reinforced continuously as he talks about, as Van Manen talks about, the experience of observing what the sergeants were doing. And we mentioned the linkage with episode 35. That linkage to me was immediately apparent, that the socialization process of what the sergeants were doing after, because there was a recognition that Van Manen articulates about how different the training environment was with actually walking the ground, being a serving police officer teamed with a partner and overseen by these sergeants. The socialization, that field work aspect of socialization, was very telling in terms of how it molded the behaviors and the attitudes of the young rookie officers.
There's an interesting aspect to this patriarchal structure that's going on here, that the departments, once the rookies would enter them, would be so discouraging to any expression of unorthodoxy that Van Manen on page 223 has this very interesting sentence: by becoming similar in attitude and behavior to his peers, the recruit avoids censure by the department, his supervisor, and most importantly, his fellow patrolmen. So there's this paradoxical situation where the individuals have to self-censor to avoid collective censorship. And this seems to be another aspect of this paramilitaristic environment that Van Manen is reporting on, that Miranda mentioned, the respect for elders and that kind of thing. The respect for elders is a very tribal organizational structure, you know, and historically it has been well substantiated by the need for survival, but I mean, that's not the case in 1975, wherever Van Manen did his study. So these attitudes and these strong kind of social hierarchies that he's reporting are certainly at odds with kind of more broader social structures. And it's very interesting to see how the recruits coming into the academy and then into the force react to that. And I definitely found a number of these findings counterintuitive, especially to do with how the attitudes change almost immediately once they enter the academy.
Well, for the longest time, the relationship between a patrolman and his or her partner has always been kind of central. You know, Van Manen talks a lot about the role of the supervisor in the socialization, but ultimately the partner roles really become center, because that's who you are driving in the car with. That's who you're walking the beat with. That's who you are ultimately chasing down and arresting people with, is the partner. And here, so the situation, the fairly common situation of having a veteran patrolman, I'm not sure what the timeline necessarily is. It probably varies a bit, but a veteran patrolman with a new patrolman is not an uncommon matching, and it's precisely to help encourage the socialization. You know, it's the front line of socialization, of getting the patrolman to acculturate to the environment, so that to avoid any, you know, problems with supervisors or what have you. It's very, very central, and that definitely came out in the study.
Yeah. What seems interesting to me here is that for some reason, especially because he's looking at the work of these people very up close, I would expect more discussions on maybe the specific, like, skill-related training, you know, learning how to shoot and something like that. And I would expect that would be something more about taking pride in having being quick with a gun, or just reaction to unexpected situations, you know, being able to handle surprises. But it seems much more that the real thing that is important and central in this culture is conformance. You know, for some reason, I would imagine I'm sure the technical skills are important, but there is to be a very attentive set of discipline mechanisms to create conformance. And that seems to be what is really valued, to be part of this community.
Well, I mean, conformity is predictability, and that's also an institution of trustworthiness to an extent, which is super important here for these people as they, go out into the mean streets to deal with the crime and population. I think there's an implicit aspect of that. I agree that the paper he has a very lengthy description of methods and measurements and that kind of stuff, and then it just sort of drops out into conclusions almost immediately, which is a bit anticlimactic. But he does mention there that certain motivational metrics that he's using, that one of them, I think, motivation drops almost immediately. And I think that might account for kind of what you're saying, that this emphasis on conformity and routine and the book, as it were, is something that recruits might not be necessarily expecting. But of course, we don't know that because he doesn't say anything explicitly about this.
But also maybe, what I know about, you know, police just comes from TV series. So just take it with a pinch of salt, because that's what I've seen. So what I mean is that if you're cultivating the idea or the dream of becoming a policeman, it may just be painted in your head as a dream. So depending on what you see on the streets or what you see on TV, and then when you actually enter the organization, you see that things are actually quite different, and there are other values, other aspects that you wouldn't suspect, but are actually more important. So this is basically what Pedro said, but put in the shoes of someone who's actually undertaking this career. So maybe that could explain changes also in terms of attitudes, that it's actually part of the going from, I want to become a policeman or an astronaut and so on, and then seeing what it actually entails, for instance.
Well, in addition, Van Manen talks about a little bit about how the recruitment process artificially inflates one's expectations, too. I mean, you get the process of joining or having the ability to become a police officer is necessarily invigorating, I think. You are encouraged to go in. And so maybe you go into the recruiting process either, you know, somewhat favorable to the idea of being a police officer, or maybe you're questioning or what have you. But by the time that you actually sign the papers and off you go, you've been built up. And so I guess it's not surprising that the motivation, you know, once the first brush with reality changes your motivation. I'm not surprised that went down so fast.
Well, I think there is also another component, and he discusses that in the paper. I think he talks about the fact that patrolmen perceived... so maybe it's the idea that a very valid activity and was perceived as something that could lead up to rewards was the field investigation activities. You know, anything that could result into an arrest. But actually, these activities are the ones that account for the smallest amount of time in a patrolman's or patrolwoman's time. So there is maybe this idea that, you know, you're expecting to see the work in itself, you know, what someone could see classically as police work, the investigation, the, you know, following the leads, maybe making an arrest. But actually, as any other occupation today, there's a lot of routines and procedures and paperwork and things that you have to do as part of the general part of the work, not just the action part, so to speak.
Yeah, but you know, doing investigation is not really a patrol person's job description. I mean, they have to progress up to the point when they get to do that. But the thing about building up, though, that Tom mentioned, there's an interesting kind of substitution, kind of switch going on here, that Van Manen reports that one of these things that he was looking at, the expressed organizational commitment, unlike the other metrics that he was looking for the recruits, that while it did decline, it generally remained still high. So I think there's two things there. One is that Tom said that they get built up and hyped up during the police department, and that creates a certain level of organizational commitment. But then that gets replaced by commitment to fellow workers and one's own squad. And that is in parallel to a number of studies done in military and in conflict environments, where the more idealistic and kind of this dreamy, ideological, maybe even representation of organization that one is joining gets replaced by kind of a more downright social, close-knit group type of a dynamic. Because I remember there was a study of the Special Air Service during the Falklands conflict, where people, as part of the organization, were becoming so disillusioned with the ideals and images that they had come to know as perpetuated through, you know, history and society and culture and all that sort of thing. But that was, you know, again, replaced by a commitment to one another in this very visceral, very close quarters kind of way.
But I suppose here, one of the central aspects of this context, so the context of the police force, is that the values that underlie the organization, they're very, very ideal. So they're like the top level of ideals. And every organization is made of people, and everyone makes mistakes, everyone is human. But the police is a place where you expect to find justice and protection, and they're probably just very, very on the spectrum of how ideal a value could be, it's very top level.
Well, on page 224, when Manon says in the second paragraph, apparently, the police occupation offers one an excellent opportunity to satisfy social and self-actualizing needs. Policing embodies intense social bonds and provides primarily personal satisfactions involving subjective feelings of performing an important and worthwhile task. The fact that esteem needs are considerably unfulfilled would indicate that the patrol officers do not perceive others as recognizing the worth of their occupation. So it's a very kind of inside sort of a club in many ways. It kept reminding me of peripheral legitimate participation, where newcomers get progressively socialized through interactions with more experienced members of the community into becoming more central members of the community, except this is on steroids on the aspect of conformity.
Yeah. And also another thing is that it's not only in steroids in the conformity, but also I think in steroids in terms of the interdependence and this kind of group level word that you join, because it's not only that you become part of the organization, but as we, you know, you all said before, you join a specific immediate group that is going to be that people are going to work with, and there is a very strong sense of teamwork and codependence, you know, because you work always with a pair with someone else, and you take turns and everything. So there is seems to be this very kind of intensified teamwork spirit.
There is. It's like a tribe. And somewhere he mentions that the commitment of individuals to their sergeants and their squads is higher than commitment to kind of institutional values of the police department.
Yeah, no, that's I think the statement down at the bottom of page 224 is just so telling, and it summarizes a lot of the study very well. Very few institutionalized rewards involved in police work, but many potential punishments. I mean, there's... It's, you could see that, you know, maybe in some other types of work that where the rewards and punishment are more balanced, that there would be much more commitment to the institution. But here, it's in an environment where you feel like you're walking on eggshells, perhaps on a constant basis, it really does limit one's affection for the institution. It's almost like, you know, we're in it against ourselves as much as we're in it against society.
Well, let's maybe kind of delineate the contributions of this study a bit clearer, and specifically that there are two, and they will become kind of more well connected as we talk about also and start weaving in the other paper that that Pedro suggested for this episode. And so there is a an analytic component to this work, which is kind of what we were talking about mainly now. But then there's also a secondary methodological component, which is not explicitly, I mean, if you don't count no, a dozen pages on methodology, not explicitly expressed here, but how the study was done and what are the implications of doing studies this way to kind of where we are now and how science, as it were, is produced.
Well, one is very clear. Von Manen, with his study of the police work, has been instrumental for the development of field methods and more specifically ethnography in management and organizational studies. I mean, not only by the fact that his work was one of the first ones to be published in places like ASQ, this journal, but also he has trained a number of important organizational and occupational ethnographers at MIT. Steve Barley, Gideon Kunda, many others that have to, you know, go on and train others in turn. So there is this kind of, you know, almost emerging kind of the research approach within our field. And I think there is also something very important about looking at the work in itself, you know. I think he makes a case somewhere that although it's has relationships with previous studies of occupational communities, he's not interested in how in these occupational communities you can see broader social issues like power dynamics or gender dynamics. He's interested in the work itself, in the organization of the work, and how that can be almost like the measure to understand a number of organizational aspects. And that's all for part 1 of episode 38. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the discussion and found it valuable. If so, please tell your friends, colleagues, and students who may be interested in these topics about the podcast. You can also give us feedback, which we love to receive, via Twitter, Facebook, or our website, which is where you can also subscribe to our newsletter. Please join us next time as we continue discussing the work by Van Manen on police socialization here, on Talking About Organizations.